I think that any type of adversity builds a titanium spine and gives you the power, the strength, and the resilience to persevere, because you have to. There's so many hardships and so many inequities. When you get to be a practicing lawyer like you and me in a prestigious law firm, that just marks a change in society.
Hello, and welcome to Dwayne Morris, DEI 360 with Joe West. I am Unika Anderson Howard, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Manager at the firm, and it is my pleasure to introduce today's episode with Japanese-American lawyer Joan Haritani, as she shares with Joe how injustice and adversity became the driving forces throughout her life and career to advocate for change and to help build a titanium spine.
Hello, everyone. This is Joseph West. I am a partner in the trial group at Dwayne Morris. I have the privilege of serving on our management committee, and I also have the privilege of serving as the firm's Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer. Welcoming to the podcast today one of my favorite people on the planet, a longtime partner and extraordinary lawyer at Morgan Lewis, Joan Haritani. Joan, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing so great, Joe, and you made my day even better by being able to have this conversation with you, being reunited with you. This is a fabulous, fabulous day. Thanks for having me.
I'm even more honored to hear you say that, since today is your birthday. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you so much. And I was saying before the recording started, what better way to spend a birthday than to talk to an old beloved friend like you, Joe, on a topic that you and I have cared about since the beginning of our professions and that we've lived with all of our lives. So thank you. Thank you for timing it, because honestly, this is the best birthday gift a person can give me.
Well, Joan, thank you for saying that. And I want people to know that I first met Joan when I was in-house at Walmart. She was one of my outside counsel, an extraordinarily gifted lawyer. And as Joan just mentioned, someone who is deeply committed to the issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and who has lived a life of both professional and personal service in this space. So, Joan, let's jump in. First of all, for those who might be living on another planet who don't know you, tell us a little bit about your practice at Morgan Lewis and the kind of work that you do. And then we'll talk a little bit about the diversity, equity, and inclusion space.
Yes, thank you, Joe. I have been very blessed to have a beautiful practice at Morgan Lewis & Bockius Global Law Firm. Obviously, I am a high-stakes trial first-chair lawyer. I also work with clients on crisis management on high-stakes issues. I have been blessed by the ABA to receive the Margaret Brent Award. The Spirit of Excellence Award, and to get both awards is quite an honor. NAPABA has awarded me the Trailblazers Award, and I am the first female woman of color president in its then 134-year history of the Bar Association of San Francisco. So I've been fortunate to have a wonderful career supported by friends and past clients. I mean, you are a past client who's greatly supportive of me in my career, and that's what it takes. It takes a village to raise somebody like me in the law, and I feel just so honored to be here, Joe. Thank you.
Well, Joan, listen, as you were talking about those honors that you received, I was talking to an actress who had gotten an EGOT, because the list of people who have received both the Spirit of Excellence Award and the Margaret Brent Award, two of the highest honors that the American Bar Association gives, is very, very short list, and you're in rare company. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the most moving experiences I've had was listening to you at the ceremonies where you were honored by the ABA. Talk about your parents' experience with Japanese internment camps. Can you just spend a couple of minutes talking about that experience, please?
Oh, I'm happy to, and thanks for asking. So in April of 1942, the Japanese Americans awoke to signs, the Executive Order 9066. I have actually a framed copy of one in my office in San Francisco, to report to a designated spot for further processing within 24 hours, leaving your homes, leaving your pets, leaving all of your belongings behind, to go and to take only what you could carry and they had no idea where they were going to. And so, you know, Japanese Americans are traditionally very patriotic, very dutiful people. They follow the rules. So they all wore their Sunday best. They wore their Sunday dresses, their Easter dresses, their white shoes, their matching white, their very best. They didn't know that they were being transported by train, in my mother's case, to Santa Anita, a horse race track in Southern California, to be thrown with her entire family into a horse stall that still had hay and horse manure in it. With all of her siblings, she was there for 9 months while the American government was building incarceration camps throughout the most desolate areas of America. My mother and her family ended up going to Heart Mountain, Wyoming. There is a memorial there with one of the barracks, I think, still standing. My father went to Amache, Colorado. And in addition to that insult and losing all of their farmland and their beautiful home in Mountain View, my father's father was a Methodist minister in Loomis. And losing his parish and the ability to minister, to live in a horse stall and then to be put into an incarceration camp. And the ironic thing about that is that the Hawaiians started the 100th, I think, battalion or regiment, I get the two confused, to fight in the U.S. Army. They were a segregated group. And the Japanese Americans, continental side, also wanted to fight. And they all joined what is known as the 442nd, which is the most highly decorated unit of its kind in American history, because it saved American soldiers from Texas who were surrounded by Italians in a bowl. In Italy, losing of the 3,000 442nd soldiers who did the rescue, they lost 2,000. So, you know, so while the Japanese American sons were fighting for America, their theme was go for broke, because they wanted to prove that they were 100% American. Their families, their women were in these incarceration camps. My mother graduated from Heart Mountain High School. And her yearbook is astounding. It's just so powerful because it shows the pictures of this desolate environment and the poetry of the of these high school kids about being thrust into this environment when you are an American citizen. And the reason I'm so happy that you asked me about it is because so many people still don't know the story.
That's
and,
right.
You know, and when 9/11 happened, my aunts and uncles, they're in their 90s, were so afraid for the Muslims. That something would also happen to them. And history cannot repeat itself.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm so glad you mentioned that, because it shows two things. One, in this era where there are elements in our society that want to erase and even pretend that the most unfortunate portions of our history didn't happen, it's even more important for us to understand, to teach, and to appreciate that history and respect the people who endured it. And that is something that I think is so important and why this story needs to be told.
Thank you. And I think, you know, it's uncomfortable, of course, to talk about shameful chapters. It is uncomfortable. But unless we get through and can talk intelligently and actually kind of almost dispassionately, factually about what happened, how can we advance diversity, equity, inclusion in the legal profession?
And because how can we, to your point about 9/11, how can we ensure that something like that doesn't happen again?
Exactly. I mean, we are in the land of opportunity, and Lady Justice is blind. She has a blindfold, right? She has a sword and a balance. And so we have to remember, kind of getting back to just the tenets of our profession. The tenets of our profession are really to uphold justice. Right. And upholding justice means to learn from history, to talk about it. So that is a topic that I'm very happy to talk about. My mother, I'm blessed that she's still with me, is 95.
Is that
95,
right?
Yes. And she talks about her experience as if it were yesterday. It leaves marks, as you can imagine. But
she,
you know,
still
she
remembers it.
Oh, absolutely. What's interesting, Joe, is she has no memory of what happened for the 9 months when she lived at Santa Anita. I asked her about it. I said, do you guys go to school? Was there a makeshift school? Like, what did you do? She goes, you know what? I have no idea. And I'm not going to force her to remember. because obviously psychologically that's what she needs to do to compartmentalize it. And you know, my dad, he was a doughboy in the US Army. All of my uncles, my aunts, they all went on to have careers. My mother was a medical transcriber for the VA hospital in Livermore. You know, everyone's a productive member of society. And so what's wrong with talking about it?
Yes, you know? That's right. Joan, how has that experience, how has the experience and the experiences, how have those experiences shaped your approach to these issues? How have they informed your work in this space? You're one of the pioneers and one of the really leading voices around diversity, equity, and inclusion. You were just on a panel before you joined us today. I know you'll be on a panel in November at the NAPABA conference in Las Vegas.
Yes.
When you speak on these issues, people listen. So how have your experiences shaped your approach to these issues?
Yes.
Number two, what do you see for us in the profession right now? There's certainly been progress, but there's so much work to be done.
Oh, I know.
So tell me, how have you been shaped by those experiences, particularly your parents? And then what's your assessment of where we are and what needs to happen?
Yeah, thank you. Those are two great questions. I mean, I've, without a doubt, my family's history and experience has actually enabled me to get to where I am. Because especially at the beginning of my career, I'm not going to name the law firm. It's no longer in existence. But it was a tough go because I was one of the very few minority women there, and I made partner. And how I made partner was to just be resilient and persevere. So I had to kind of dig down deep and really try to overcome any barriers. And they weren't just, you know, a lot of my mentors, frankly, were white men, because that's who was at the law firm. And so I learned from them. But it was also the world outside. People, when I would take the lead in a deposition, as thinking I was the court reporter, some members of the judiciary thinking I was not to be heard. So there, and being a minority woman, that you can imagine some of the stories in the 80s, and those are the days where women couldn't wear pants to court or to work. So it's a very different time. So I think that adversity, any type of adversity, builds a titanium spine and gives you the power, the strength, and the resilience to persevere, because you have to, because your ancestors came over here. I mean, African Americans, my goodness, your ancestors came over here. There's so many hardships and so many inequities that when you get to I believe the law is a noble profession. When you get to be a practicing lawyer like you and me in a prestigious law firm, one, that just marks a change in society.
Yeah.
You know, right? I mean, it does.
You mentioned that. All of my great-grandparents were born into slavery.
There you go.
People think about this as being something so far removed from who we are and where we are right now, but it's not.
It's not. And I'm sure that memory and that fact also fuels you to go forward and to make a difference and to speak out, to do what we're doing now, to gain, you know, friends and allies out there, and to give really the young folks hope, because if we can make it and if we can get to where we are, so can you. You can make it as well. Just hang on to it, you know, hone your skill, reach out to Joe, reach out to me, get a sponsor or mentor at your place of employment, because you deserve a seat at the table. You do, right?
That's right,
we
Jen.
All do.
We're finally seeing, Joan, I mean, when you and I met back when I was at Walmart, there were really just a handful of companies that were really pushing the envelope in this space. We now see a lot of companies both, holding their outside counsel's feet to the fire, but also looking inward with respect to their own internal stakeholders, their brand in the community and in the ecosystem, and really gaining and having a desire to gain more fluency in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space. Do you see that trend continuing? And what do you think those of us who are on the law firm side should be doing to sort of better prepare ourselves for that changing dynamic?
Absolutely. So the Institute for Inclusion in the Legal Profession, IILP, just released a report It was in Law 360. I think today, yesterday.
By the way, Sandra Yamate spoke at one of our conferences recently. So she's amazing.
She's amazing. And her report gives in-house counsel and companies metrics and a playbook in the appendix of her report, how to start to measure the data on how you're doing on a diversity, equity, and inclusion front. Because without data, you might be thinking you're doing great, but unless you look at the numbers, how do you know how to improve or whether you need to improve or how much you need to improve without that data? So I advise everyone listening to this to please look at, it's on the web, you know, IILP, their report. And I think obviously, you know, we've made some progress. There are more folks of color, there are more LGBTQ, there are more women in positions of power or in the law. But the question is really, where are you in terms of the C-suite? Where are you in terms of equity partnership? Where are you in terms of getting origination credit? And so one of the things I think that we have to charge ourselves as outside counsel and you know, people who look like us, as part of our duties, which we always take on additionally anyway, is to make sure you mentor and sponsor as many talented folks as you can and give them access to power. Give them the ability to present to other partners within the firm. Give them the ability to meet with even, you know, junior in-house counsel that are usually the ones who give the work, set up those relationships. So there's just so much we still need to do. I mean, I can dwell on the negative and all of that, but that is the easy thing to do. The harder thing to do is to move the needle.
That's right.
And I think it takes podcasts like you. Joe, you are a pioneer in this space. You are every week with this podcast spreading the word and encouraging people to keep this on their radar because it's a moral imperative. And when you consider the vast amount, the population of America, majority, minority, it's also a business imperative and just smart for companies and corporations who are consumer facing to understand that your consumers look like us.
Right.
Right?
That's right.
And we have spending power.
That means if nothing else motivates you, the business case alone should as well. Joan, we have just a couple of minutes left. I want to ask you one question. There are so many younger lawyers who are really struggling now with the changes in the profession. The pandemic has had an impact. You know, returning to work, not returning to work, still trying to navigate so many of the challenges in the workforce, in the workplace, within law firms, even in corporate law departments that are different than the ones we were faced with. What's the one piece of advice you would give to younger lawyers right now to help them sort of navigate that journey?
That's a really good question. And I think that you have to understand that this is a tough career. It's the practice of law, so you have to keep practicing at it to get better. And the number one advice I would give to you is to believe in yourself, to do whatever you need to do to really encourage and practice self-love and self-confidence. Because if you believe in yourself, it's very hard to get put down.
That is fantastic advice for this profession, for the workforce generally, and for life. Joan, listen, to say that I'm honored that you spent some time with me and us on your birthday is an understatement. I just love you to pieces. You're one of my favorite people, and I can't thank you enough, my friend.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a joy and anytime. And Joe, I'll see you soon.
Take care, Joan. Thank you.
Take care.